It was hard not to agree with him. Wars in the past often accelerated social reform, provided technological benefits, even sparked artistic activity. This one, however, seemed tailor-made to provide none of these positive byproducts. Such improvements as had been made on late 20th century technology were, like tachyon bombs and warships 2 kilometers long, at best interesting developments of things that only required the synergy of money and existing engineering techniques. Social reform? The world was technically under martial law. As for art, I'm not sure I know good from bad, but artists, to some extent, have to reflect the temper of the times. Paintings and sculpture were full of torture and dark brooding. Movies seemed static and plotless. Music was dominated by nostalgic revivals of earlier forms. Architecture was mainly concerned with finding some place to put everybody. Literature was damn near incomprehensible. Most people seemed to spend most of their time trying to find ways to outwit the government, trying to scrounge a few extra K's or ration tickets without putting their lives in too much danger. And in the past, people whose country was at war were constantly in contact with the war. The newspapers would be full of reports. Veterans would return from the front. Sometimes the front would move right into town. Invaders marching down Main Street or bombs whistling through the night air, but always the sense of either working toward victory or at least delaying defeat. The enemy was a tangible thing, a propagandist's monster, whom you could understand, whom you could hate. But this war, the enemy was a curious organism, only vaguely understood, more often the subject of cartoons than nightmares. The main effect of the war on the home front was economic, unemotional, more taxes, but more jobs as well. After 22 years, only 27 returned veterans, not enough to make a decent parade. The most important fact about the war to most people was that if it ended suddenly, Earth's economy would collapse. You approached the dirigible by means of a small propeller-driven aircraft that drifted up to match trajectories and docked alongside. A clerk took our baggage, and we checked our weapons with the purser, then went outside. Just about everybody on the flight was standing out on the promenade deck, watching Manhattan creep toward the horizon. It was an eerie sight. The day was very still, so the bottom 30 or 40 stories of the buildings were buried in smog. It looked like a city built on a cloud, a thunderhead floating. We watched it for a while, and then went inside to eat. The meal was elegantly served and simple. Filet of beef, 2 vegetables, wine, cheese and fruit, and more wine for dessert. No fiddling with ration tickets. A loophole in the rationing laws implied that they were not required for meals consumed en route, on intercontinental transport.
This ends Disc 4.